making a lot of noise here. I'm learning what it means to let God love me, and that's an adventure every day. I'm recovering from spiritual and emotional abuse and addiction to food and work and control, and I've had issues with pornography and alcohol. We were coming back from Tennessee Friday. Went down to see the grandkids and Bethany and Scott, and stopped off at a Chinese restaurant in Lebanon, and took our seats, and they set four people. Well, maybe they were there before we got there. I don't know. Doesn't matter. Not trying to be nosy, but they were talking loud enough to where we could hear what they were saying, and one guy asked another guy, and he said, yeah, I've been out for like a week now, and that kind of, you know, got my attention, and he said, you know, rehab sucks, and I thought, oh, okay, so he's been in rehab. Don't know what for. The course of the conversation, you could tell that they were being real careful what they asked him. There was three of them kind of caretaking him, you know, hadn't seen him in a long time, and they were trying to love on him the way we do with people who are in a vulnerable situation. I was so tempted, you know, at the food bar just to whisper, you know, we admitted we were powerless over addictions, and, you know, I just thought, wonder if I could just somehow make a connection here. And we paid for our meal, and they paid for their meal, and we got out in the parking lot, and again, we weren't trying to eavesdrop, but they were talking pretty loud, and the three of them were in one car, and he was in the other one, and they were like, well, we've got several movies. They had rented movies, and, you know, we've got several movies if you want to come over and watch movies, and he's, no, I think I'm going to go meet so-and-so somewhere, and inside I was thinking, no, I know how this is going to play out. I've been in this long enough to know what's going to happen here, and everything inside of me said, jump in the middle, do something about that. And I thought, I really can't. And he got in his car and drove off. And you could see them get in their car, kind of crestfallen. And then they just kind of sat there for a minute. They didn't go anywhere. They just kind of sat there. And again, I was so tempted to walk over and say, y'all, you know, take heart. It's going to be okay. He may go through this cycle 20 more times, but just hang in there with him. But it just, I don't know, refreshed in my mind that Bowling Green is not the only place with hurting people. Everywhere you go, people are medicating, and some of them medicate with what illegal, illicit ways, you know, we air quotes, and then we found a whole myriad of ways to medicate in legal ways, you know, but nobody wants to hurt. And one of the things we do to medicate is we become codependent, and so we've been talking about that. Last week we talked about, how do I know if I'm codependent? When I look in the mirror, how do I know if I'm codependent? And what's interesting is that afterwards I had some people say, boy, that really helped. I understand codependency more. And I had one guy say, I did not understand a word you said. we're not going to stop talking about codependency. Sorry. It's just know this. Whether you believe me or not, just know this, that every one of us is an addict. Everybody in this room is an addict. Word? Yes. Word. Every one of us in this room is codependent. What's interesting is that people will far more quickly admit that they're an addict before they will that they're a codependent. There's something about that word. I don't know what it is, but no, I don't. I may be an addict, but I'm not that. I'm what you just said. I'm that codependent. I'm not that. And I don't know what it is. Maybe if we found another term that would describe the same thing, I don't know. But we're going to keep talking about it. And I asked Robbie on the way over here tonight. I said, because we've had a codependency set of codependency groups 4 or 5 years ago. Some of y'all might remember Bill, but 4 or 5, something like that. And then we're finishing up the same book again now. And I said, do you remember anybody who has come out of a codependency group? In other words, you get to the last couple lessons, and they still declare up and down, I'm not codependent. And she said, I don't remember anybody doing that. And I said, I've been in these two groups, and I've been in rooms with a lot of men where we talked about codependency. And there are two men that I remember who said they were not codependent. And if you ask anybody else in the room, they would say that they are the most codependent people in here. So, not that we did that, but I don't know if it helps you at all, but just swallow that pill. We're all codependent. We all use and abuse each other to help ourselves feel better about ourselves. We do it in the most subtle and the most slyly manipulative ways. We fly under the radar. We wear camo. But we use and we abuse each other. When I say abuse, I don't mean with a stick. There's other ways of abusing. But we use and abuse each other so that we'll feel better about ourselves. That's codependency. So, how do I know I'm codependent? We talked about that last week. And this week, how do I know that they're codependent? The people in my life, how do I know that they are codependent? Because, it takes two people to be codependent, right? So I want to know about myself, but I also want to know about the codependent, especially the radically, on steroids type codependent people who are really toxic. I want to know about those people. So, there's just a few things that let's talk about tonight. How do you feel when they're around? When you get around certain people, how do you feel when they're around? That's the first gut check right there. It's just, how do you feel? And I wrote down, healthy, less codependent people may make you feel uncomfortable. I've had people in my life that make me feel uncomfortable, but it wasn't because they were codependent. Is because they knew things about me and were trying to help me get to a better place, so they were challenging me, or they were not threatening me, but challenging me and helping to pull me to a better place. That's a healthy, less codependent person. But how do you feel when you're around them? Do they try to control you? Do you feel like you're being invaded emotionally, spiritually, mentally, physically, anyway? Do you feel like you're being invaded? Is your space being invaded? Do you feel like you're being violated in some way? Do you feel like you're being manipulated or abused? Do you feel these feelings when they're around? Healthy, less codependent people will challenge you, but they don't ask you to become somebody you're not. And they don't make you feel like you want to run, or you want to fight, or you want to protect, or you want to, bite back. They don't arouse those feelings in you. I want people, my recovery partners challenge me, and I've asked them point blank, could you please stick a finger in my back concerning this issue or that issue? I invite them to do that. I want them to challenge me that way. But I never feel invaded or threatened or violated by them. So there's a difference with this. And, sometimes there's just triggers. So I just, I've told you my story about my dad, My dad was abusive to me. He wasn't so much to my sisters, to Loretta. And I'm so thankful that they have a better dad story than I do. But I was just kind of his. And I found out that he was his dad's whipping post. And I found out, that he was his dad's whipping post. So for a while, Jake was my whipping post. So, it's just we pass these things down. But I remember, we had, and I may have shared this with you before, but we had a real well-finished concrete floor in our attached garage. When they put that shine on it, is there a word for that? What do you call that? Sealer. Yeah. It was slick. It was really just slick. And when he would pull in and turn to come into his parking spot, his tires would squeak. And I could hear that all over the house. And he always drove a little car, so I didn't necessarily hear the motor running, but I could hear the tires squeak. And I remember that feeling of, oh, here it goes. I don't know what I'm going to get. How do you feel when you see their name on the caller ID? You hear the phone, you look, and you think, oh. You see their email address. You see, you look in Facebook Messenger and there's their name. It's like, oh. You getting what I'm saying? How do you feel when you bump into them in the store? And you're looking at bread. You're trying to figure out whether you want white or wheat. And your mind is there. And all of a sudden you look right next to you and it's like, oh. Are you following me? Or you come to a meeting at church or at business or in your civic organization or whatever, And you come in the room and there's only one empty seat left and it's right next to them. And you have to sit there the whole time, you know, and try to be a productive member of this circle of people. And the whole time you're preoccupied and at one point they scoot their chair and you think, you know, and I'm running out of room. So you have to sit next. What if at work you have to work on a project with them, you know? And all of a sudden you realize I'm going to be arm in arm with this person for the next. That I'm not talking about up here. I'm talking about here. That squeamish feeling you get of, oh. Or, you know, you get a message from a relative and they say, we're coming for, and we're going to stay for a week. And it's like, no, you know. So I'm trying to come at this tonight. Last week, I think I was too cerebral. So I'm trying to just come at this from, how do you feel right here, you know, around this person? How do you feel? Are you always walking on eggshells? Do you have to watch every word you say around them? You know, thin-skinned, hair-trigger temper, whatever, hurt the feelings, whatever. You have to be so careful what you say. Or, you know, you've heard the first liar doesn't stand a chance. You know, you say something, you know, they're going to say, well, that ain't nothing. And so then they, you know, you can't do that. Life is a contest for them. And so there's no sense in talking to them because they're going to make a contest out of it in some way. Or they may be a very unpredictable person. There's a difference between spontaneous and unpredictable. Spontaneous is good. Unpredictable is like a loose cannon. You know, you never know when they're going to lose their temper. You never know out in public if they're going to make a scene that you're thinking, no, I'm not really with them right now, you know, that kind of thing. This is where it starts getting kind of close to home. I mean, I've got these numbered. We're on number four, so it's getting better or worse, however you look at it. You kind of feel like you need to change when you're around them. Or you need to kind of become a different version of yourself. Either so you'll fly under their radar, or so they won't pick on you, or so they won't try to correct you. You know, I have to change. I can't be the real me around person X. Because the real me is never who they want when I'm around them. So I've got to change some way. Because they want to correct me. They question my motives. I don't want to keep on going on and on about my father. But that was the part that hurt me the worst with my dad. Not the physical abuse and not a lot of the other stuff, but my father never hesitated to question my motives. When I was a little boy, Loretta wasn't even born then, but when I was a little boy at the dinner table with my siblings, you know, after a day of school and I'd tried to do good all day long, and just a clumsy little boy would like knock over my milk, just knock over my milk. And instead of grabbing a towel and cleaning it up, my father would make an interrogation session. Why did you do that? And if I said, I don't know, that was the worst thing in the world to say. You know, to go, I don't know. Man, that invited terror. No, you tell me why you did that. And my father would literally grill me in front of the rest of the family until I said something equivalent to, I spilled it because I'm stupid, or I spilled it because I'm a bad person. I spilled it because I'm an inferior child or whatever. And that kind of invasion of your motives, they question your motives. And even up, I don't know, we were in our 40s and we were at a retreat. And my father did the same thing. She was there. I have witness to it. Robbie was there. He did the same thing to me and my parenting skills of our daughter. He started just digging into the motives of, well, you've always been this way. You've always, you know. Do you have people in your life that way who dig into your motives? That's, I don't know, emotional, spiritual rape. That they're invading a place, a private place inside of you that they have no business going unless you invite them in. But they invade that. People in authority will do that a lot. Parents will do that a lot. So anyway, are you kind of getting the picture? I told you it's kind of getting worse as we went down through here. They try to fix your hair. They try to fix your clothing. You know, they hover. They stare. They stalk. They spy. You always feel like you're being watched by them. Everywhere you go, they're keeping an eye on you. and they're monitoring you and your progress and your demeanor and your state of mind and all this, because they want you, because they want to change who you are. Who you are is not good enough, so they are trying to change you. And if questioned about it, they would say, "I'm just trying to help." I don't like that kind of help. And when they leave, when you part company, you feel absolutely drained. You feel like you've put in a full day's work. And I think if of all the things I've said tonight, that one there punches my buttons. When you're with somebody for any period of time and you leave, how do you feel? Do you feel exhilarated? Do you feel energized? Do you feel like, man, I could go out and conquer the world? Or do you feel like, I don't know that I could have taken another minute of that? I feel like I have run a marathon, an emotional and spiritual marathon, absolutely drained. I don't know if that hits home with you, but that really hits home with me. That person is codependent if I feel drained instead of exhilarated after I've part company with them. Here's some other examples that I put down. Just there's so many angles. There's so many, manifestations. That's the word. There's so many different manifestations of codependency that if you start down one line, and we kind of went down a line here, right? How this person makes you feel. So we kind of went down, that's one way to look at codependency. But there's so many other manifestations of it that I'm just going to talk about a few of them. They can't make a move without your opinion. This person is codependent with you if they can't make a move without your opinion. What do you think about this? What do you think about that? So they need your opinion about everything. Or they don't let you make a move without sharing their opinion. Now, another one is they are constantly asking you permission. Would it be okay if I did this? Do you care if I did that? Always asking permission. Or they expect you to always ask permission. This relationship is based on permission one way or another. Or they always need something from you. Every time you have any contact with them, you know that they need something from you. That's really the only reason they contact you. Or they always try to make you feel like you need something from them. They have something invaluable to share with you. So you really couldn't get along without me. You need me in your life. That's codependency. Or everything they do for you requires affirmation or notice or repayment. They do kind, nice, generous things to you, but then they hang around for the compliment or the tip or whatever you want to call it. A compliment is an emotional tip, I guess. Here, you're the best thing ever. Here's your $5. You're the best thing ever. So, you know, those may help some. Now, y'all know by now that I'm certified weird. Okay, Jeremy, I got a real amen from Jeremy on that one. He knows. He's my bud. For some reason, my mind went to a dog. Hang in there. Think about a big old friendly dog, big old slobbery tongue. Well, it may not be a friendly dog. Just think of a big old dog, okay? Big old tongue and also big teeth. So with a dog, if you get too close, they'll snap at you. If you get too close, this is at church, but whatever. If you get too close, they'll try to hump you. I don't like that one. You get too close, they won't stop bugging you for attention. You know, you're sitting in a chair with your hands on your knees, and all of a sudden this nose is under your hand, you know, trying to bump your hand up so you'll pet it on the head. If you get too close, they'll beg and they'll beg and they'll beg for whatever you have. You may have one just tasty little morsel left of that sandwich, but they got to have it. You get too close and they'll just beg, they'll whine, you know, they'll slobber, they'll just, you know. So why? Why do they do that? They do that because they're a dog. that because that's who a dog is. A dog does those kind of things, you know. They don't calculate. They don't meditate on it. They don't pre-plan it. That's just who they are. That's what they do, you know. And it's real easy when you have codependent people in your life to villainize them or demonize them in some way and try to make them bad people that need to be, I don't know, saved, incarcerated, you know, they need psychotherapy, whatever you want to say. And really, they're just being who they are. They need to be loved. They need to be, because love is all that's going to help them. But when you're dealing with codependent people, you have to change the way. You have to do some pretty serious study on how you're going to show that your love to those people. Because you can't just do it in the normal way. You have to do it in other ways to help them feel loved. I may be bending this threesome in Scripture all over the place, but I've come to believe that when Jesus said to turn the other cheek, and he said to walk the extra mile, and he said to give them your cloak as well, I've come to think that is partially his method of dealing with codependent people. That if you have somebody who is, say, they have anger issues, they want to dominate people through anger. I get people to do what I want them to do by being a bully. So if they won't listen to what I say and they won't listen to what I scream at them, I will physically get their attention. I will make them do what I want them to do. So I will slap them. And most people get away with the first slap unnoticed. Just you and them, you know about it. When you invite them verbally or just physically invite them to strike the other cheek, all of a sudden the community is involved. All of a sudden there are people watching. All of a sudden that person has to calculate, is this who I want to be? I want to be a hitter. I want to be a slapper. That's who I want to be. And so you're forcing them to look at themselves. You walk the extra mile. Now what's he going to do? He's going to have to talk to you. He's going to have to treat you like a human being. You're going to have a conversation with this guy who was your pack mule for the first mile. Now the second mile, you're actually going to have to talk to this person. I'm going to sue you for your, you know, part of your clothing. Give him the rest. You leave the courtroom half naked and all your wardrobe's draped over his arm, and he's got to answer for that. He's got to look himself in the mirror and say, whoa, whoa. So I think there is a way. Martin Luther King Jr. used this back in the day. There is a way of saying, I'm going to help you see who you are. I'm not going to fight you. I'm not going to demonize you. You know, I'm not going to debate you. But I'm going to help you to see who you are. You have to get creative. If it's out of anything but love, it's not going to work. But if you love that person, you can figure out ways to help them to see, oh, wow, this is not a healthy relationship, and I think it's me that's making it unhealthy, and I would like to do something about it. So, I don't know if this helps at all. I mean, you know, we'll take another 6 months, and we'll come back to codependency again, and we'll get all the same confused looks and like, do we really have to talk about this again? Yeah, it's kind of like taking your vitamins. It's good for you. But you know what we're going to do next week? Next week, I know half y'all aren't going to be here because we're going to have Super Bowl. But we're going to have our own codependency Super Bowl here. Yep. I've been thinking about this game. What we're going to do is we're going to have a timer. I don't know how we're going to have a timer. We're going to have like a two-minute timer. And we are going to invite you to come up. And in that 2 minutes, we're going to have you describe one manifestation of codependency. Doesn't have to be just, you just come up and say, here's codependent behavior. It's like this, 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 and this. And then you sit down. And then in the crowd, we get to guess, okay, you just described yourself. You just described a family member. You just described somebody you worked with, or you just described one of the toxic bully people in your life or whatever. And we get to try to guess, not the name, but like the place they have in your life. And I don't know what the prize will be, and I don't even know what the scoring system will be, but I think we'll have fun. And nobody will get bruised or broken, and that we won't even have to endure a halftime. We'll just be able to play the codependent Super Bowl game. Yeah, all five of us. I don't have anyone here. All right, so we're finished with the lesson. You can pull the podcast or whatever you're doing.